February 12th, and the time is 1:08. Present Representative Gall, Representative Wallace, and Representative Thompson. Today we're going to have the folks from the Learn Alaska Network testifying to give us an overview. One of the main thrusts that we hope to achieve in the Special Committee on Telecommunications, and I'm sure that as we go along this will develop, there'll be other priorities and other areas that we want to look at, is, as I said in our initial meeting, we've got lots of hardware and we've got lots of software out there. We really need, as I feel, to look at the product that's being dispensed, the information. How are they interrelating to each other? I think we recognize that the word telecommunications covers every area, from the work that Learn Alaska is doing to the computer networks, to many other things in this particular field. And I feel that primarily in our initial stages, we should be in a fact-finding area, because the information industry is going to play very much a part in the future of our state. And it may not be at this particular stage what one might call a glamorous committee, but I think there are a lot of exciting opportunities. I think it's generally agreed that we're not going to have the dollars to build the highways to replace, but I think there's a tremendous challenge for the state of Alaska to build information highways. And I think each of us know that in our daily business, what we function on is information. Sometimes I think we have an information overload and a lack of really information-rich knowledge. Let the record show that Representative Davis is in attendance. So to kick our meeting off today, we have Jane Demrett, who is the Southwest Director in UA for the UA Instructional Telecommunications. Jane, and as you would like, feel free to bring your people up.
Great. Well, thank you, Red.
Just for the record, your name and...
My name is Jane Demert, and as Red just said, I'm the statewide director of the University of Instructional Telecommunications Service. I wrote him a note and wrote that title out, and I know my handwriting's bad, so I apologize.
Is it the South? Okay,
it's statewide.
State law, all right. Okay, I was wondering what Southwest was. Okay, my apologies.
Well, mine for the handwriting. First of all, I'd like to just acknowledge what I see as a very important development in terms of the fact that this committee exists. And I'd like to thank you as the chairman of this for not only seeing that it's happening, but also for inviting us just to brief you about what we're doing. For the last several years, there has not been, in as organized a fashion, I believe, a group that was going to address telecommunications. And given the state's large involvement with telecommunications and our dependence on it, this just seems extraordinarily timely. As I see it, over time, this group can really become a resource, not only to the legislature, but really to the state. And I see a real need for there to be an arena in which there is a good knowledge of the use that is being made of telecommunications within the state, a group that can assist in the definition of the emerging needs that we have, and also a group that can stimulate plan development, which I think is really one of the bottom line considerations for the future within the state. Today, what I'm going to do is to answer basically we're going to address together four basic issues, and they are, first of all, what are we as the Learn Alaska Network doing with the uses of technology? Secondly, beginning to get into a question that Red posed, and that is it effective? Thirdly, to talk about what the future holds in terms of our needs and ways in which telecommunications can assist us in meeting those needs, and also to talk about, as we go through this, areas where we really would appreciate your guidance and leadership. I'd like to introduce two people who will be following up on my very brief sort of overview, and they're Bill McCunn, who is responsible for the operation of the Learn Alaska Network, and Beverly Michaels, who is the manager of the programming function, that's TV programming for the Learn Alaska Network. And Chancellor Herb Lyon, who's over here next to Beverly, is a chancellor whose campus is very intimately involved with the use of the Learn Alaska Network, and who I think may also have some very timely things to say, and I understand we'll be also providing a briefing to you at a later time. The Learn Alaska Network consists basically of two services. One is the statewide television service, and the other is the statewide audio conferencing service. The audio conferencing service began operation in the fall of 1980, just to give you an idea of the relative age, if you will, of this service. And the television network became operational in January of 1982, and its first active use for instruction was in September of 1982. And since then, we've grown from a beginning of the audio network with about 35 sites to 330 at this point, that's audio conference sites. The television network began in the fall of 82 with about 75 sites, and now there are 248 TV sites within the state. So as you can see, it's become quite comprehensive in terms of the level of coverage that we provide. One aspect of the university's use that I think is very important to our discussion here is that our major emphasis is on using this service for direct instruction. It's not as a supplement, but rather direct instruction is provided using television and audio conferencing. People began that use, first of all, with audio conferencing. It was the most readily available. We had it available in the fall of 1981. And that use has grown very rapidly to the point that this last spring there were 2,400 students who were enrolled in courses using audio conferencing. That level of growth and that level of use exceeds, I believe, the rates of growth and the rates of use that you see in any other state within the United States. What we're seeing now at this point is that teachers and students are literally making changes in the way they teach and students in the way they study, given the fact that they're using telecommunications. And I think as we look at future growth and development within this state, that giving people time to adapt to technology and to make it their own is one of the very important considerations. And I can't underscore that enough for the purposes of planning, so that when you're using something alien, something that is new, if you yourself have had a part in its planning and conceptualization, as is the case with any kind of change, it's much more likely to be accepted. I think there are three conditions that we should be looking at as it relates to telecommunications within the state and its use for teaching. The first is that there are growing demands for education. As you're talking with all of the members of the university community, what we're seeing for the most part are growing enrollments. The second factor that we're faced with is decreasing state revenues. And the third factor that we're facing is a decreased level of federal funding. And I think we're going to see all of those continuing to converge, and I think telecommunications is one of the few bridges that we have to make a transition to this new set of economic conditions. I want to tell you about what we are doing right now within the university using the telecommunications service that we have available, focusing on audio and TV. And I believe that you have scheduled a follow-up session with the University Computer Network that will get into some detail on the use that's being made of computing. Just to give you a brief idea, at Anchorage Community College this past spring, over 500 students were enrolled in courses that used television and audio conferencing. And they taught a whole range of courses using those technology. Just to give you an idea, they taught courses in management, business management, in psychology, and in computer literacy. And the only reason I bring this up is to underscore the fact that this is a versatile set of technologies. And that, for your purposes, I think you will find that given the range of technologies that are available and under development, they can be used for almost any area of activity in which you have an interest and the state has a need. To go to another type of location where conditions are certainly very different, I think you might like to know about Chukchi Community College based in Kotzebue and serving the villages of the Nana region. There in the spring, and this is only their, they were completing at that point their second year of operation, they had 100 students who were enrolled in courses that were delivered almost exclusively by audio conferencing. Their instructors travel as often as they have the time and resources to travel, but that is very infrequent for the amount of learning that occurs in the semester. And those students were taking English. There were a whole series of English courses, math, again about 5 math courses, and humanities courses. And one of the things that I'm going to touch on later is the need to bring on a more integrated approach to the use of computing, and that's something that Chukchi Community College is feeling very much a need for right now. I was just in Kotzebue 2 weeks ago working with them on their planning, and as you can imagine, teaching math at a distance is at best a challenging enterprise. They are very much in need of a way to link computing for all of those villages to provide written access to information from the teacher and from the teacher back to the students, and by the same token to use audio graphics, and Bill McCunn will be touching on that in his presentation. Islands Community College in Sitka has truly become a regional community college using the Learn Alaska Network, and they are delivering a full program to their communities. This is literally to all of their communities, and this semester have expanded so that they're also delivering community college courses using the network to the communities from Yakutat down to Juneau, and also the communities that traditionally are served by Ketchikan Community College. There's another kind of use that's occurring that is really quite new. And that's for the development of new fields of instruction. And I'm thinking in particular here of agriculture, where the Mat-Su Community College offered an agricultural symposium series involving farmers and agriculturalists from throughout the state over last spring that reached 436 people, to be specific. And that is something that they simply would not be able to do without that kind of telecommunications support. A second aspect of what is happening with Learn Alaska now is that we are able to deal with topics that are very difficult for any one campus to deal with on its own, simply because they're very complex topics and there's not a lot of well-developed curriculum available. But if one campus has it, it can be shared by all using telecommunications. And there I'm speaking specifically about one area, and that's the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. We're right now on the Learn Alaska Network, the university's rural education program, and the Community Economic Development Corporation, CEDC, are sponsoring a series of seminars on 1991 issues that we are carrying on the Learn Alaska Network. There is just very little information widely available on ANCSA, and we know it's a need, and we're attempting to address it through the development of those kinds of programs, which are developed by other units of the university system. And I think this is an area of growing need where we see an educational need, a technical resource that can be brought together to address a very big issue for all of us as Alaskans. At this point, what I'd like to do is just to move now from giving you a very, very thumbnail sketch about what is happening to talk to you about what can happen. And we're trying to keep this brief so that we can then really answer your questions and get into a discussion that really tracks on areas of your particular interest. So let me ask you, Bill, if you could just kind of join me on that.
Excuse me just a second. Yes. Representative Wallace had a 1:30 meeting. Representative Wallace, is there any question that you might have, a particular area that you have of concern that we might address after you're here?
Yes, if you could discuss our answer after. Thank you. apologize.
No, that's all right. Jane, go ahead. Just bring on your people as you desire, and then we can, if it's all right with the members, if we can save our questions till afterwards.
Gil, could you? Well, I've got the other thing to chew up too.
That's right, there's one of them.
Open the door, just let them, they're not Xeroxing, it's all right, just start Xeroxing, if that's gonna be a problem.
Whatever you want.
Just if you could take one of those.
Just very quickly, if I could kind of give an overview of the technologies that are currently used and not get too in too much depth. Included in that packet that was passed around just now are some materials you might want to go through. There's, we included a map which shows the extent of the system, a guide for the television system, a little brochure which gives a thumbnail sketch of what Learn Alaska is about and used by both the university and the Department of Education. We tossed in a little glossary of terms that we use, which include terms that relate to a variety of kinds of telecommunication services. Then there's some additional information, which includes some information on satellites that are used in Alaska. Excuse me, a frog in my throat. And then a couple of articles regarding the Learn Alaska Network that were written by one of the staff members that describes both the network in kind of a generic sense, and then specifically the use of teletext that I'll be giving him a background on. The system itself, as most of you are probably quite aware, is based on satellite technology. The primary reason for that is because the state of Alaska is pretty well locked to that technology because of our lack of a terrestrially based system of telecommunications. That offers us both some disadvantages and advantages. In most cases, we've been able to use that system to an advantage. In the Learn Alaska system, as Jane pointed out, we have relied to date primarily on two systems. One is a television system. It's a standard color television system signal that we send out. And we use what's called low-power television. It's an existing technology which had been there for a long time, just a low-power television transmitter. But the FCC then permitted the use of that low-power transmitter as an origination tool for a community. And we were able to take that low-power transmitter, couple that with Alaska's use of satellites, and then develop a statewide television system which could be sustained fairly economically. The other part of the system, which is also which is also satellite based, is based on the standard telephone system and a bridging system that we use, which allows us to hook together sites. Boy, I'm going to have to get a cup of coffee, drink or something.
Yeah.
Can't get rid of that. I think it's because I drank coffee before I sat down here.
Oh, is that right? Would you rather have a glass of water?
No, that'll be all right. There's something. Thank you.
Because we had teletext and video text here.
Yeah, then we could just...
I'm reading that.
Excuse me. But anyway, what I started to say, the teleconferencing system that we utilize is very similar to the teleconferencing system that you use. We started out in the beginning with a concept of having a bridging system which would allow us access from any place that had a telephone instrument, just a standard telephone. The capacity of the system has grown such that at the beginning of fall next year we'll have approximately 200 ports available to us within that system. That essentially means this, is that we can have up to, 200 divided by 5, 50 conferences going on simultaneously with 5 sites or fewer. We've got a situation now where most of our conferences that are being utilized average about 7 sites or 7 locations or communities. So we have multiple conferences going on all the time. As Jane pointed out, when the conferencing system started, it was the first of the components of the system. The first year we had approximately 250 conferences. this current year, instructional conferences, where we will average approximately 7,000 conferences this current year. Most of those are direct instruction, and the majority of those are at the university level for courses for credit. So we're involving a lot of students in utilizing that audio conferencing network. The thing that's really key to the audio conferencing network is that a student literally, although we try to direct them into using those 330 sites that Jane mentioned to participate in a credit course, the student literally, if they're in a pinch, can call in from home or from anywhere. And in another situation, the instructor, also in a pinch, can call in anywhere. At Chukchi Community College, for instance, the instructors use that ability to call in to be able to make the circuit of the 10 villages in their service area. And they can teach their course, see the student or students at that location, still teach their course on a regular basis, because all they need is the conferencing set there, and they're able to call in to do it. This offers a lot of flexibility. One of the examples, and I don't want to, because we're moving quickly, but this is one I always use because it really impressed me. We were teaching a course in conjunction with a nursing course that was being taught in Washington State, and they had a group of communities in Washington State hooked together on an audio conferencing network that's very similar to the LTN. We had 10 locations in the state of Alaska hooked in with that group. They were all being taught by a single instructor who was housed at the University of Washington. That instructor went on vacation to Maine, and the instructor at the time the class rolled around was on a fishing boat off the coast of Maine, called in by marine telephone, taught the class from a fishing boat off the coast of Maine to students in both Washington and Alaska. And I think that's probably the best illustration of the flexibility of the system. But within the state of Alaska, it gives tremendous flexibility. That system is combined with the television system to provide the one-way live video out of a classroom so that an instructor can teach a group of students and have the immediate interaction back and forth between the students and the student and teacher. So they have a real classroom situation going on. For those of you that might have been involved in education or around education in the past, it used to be whenever we talked about instructional television in the early days, we looked at the idea of an instructor in a black coat in front of a chalkboard standing up in front of a television camera, and we derisively called that the talking head. Well, we've reinvented the talking head. The only situation here, though, that's different is that this talking head talks to students who can talk back. And so that component of interaction that's been added by the use of the telephone system in combination or in tandem with the television system has literally extended the classroom so that students can participate and can access instruction that they wouldn't have access to any other way. Another thing that Jane mentioned, the use of the term audio graphics. This is a term that's used by somebody that wanted to make up a term that nobody else knew. All it amounts to is it's some sort of a support for an audio conference that can be delivered on a telephone line, either text or something that you can manipulate. Some of you may be familiar with the term electronic chalkboard. You may have seen demonstrations of it, so that a person can actually write on a chalkboard and on a monitor at a distance over the telephone line. The students see a monitor with a reproduction of what was on that chalkboard, but it's actually being sent over the telephone line. That's one illustration of what we're talking about when we're talking about audio graphics. A lot of our instructors who were teaching courses only by audio were saying, I need some sort of help, I need some sort of support other than just the audio, and I need it immediately, and I don't need full motion television for this course. So we started looking at audio graphics devices, everything from BitPad, slow scan television, the thing that I was just mentioning, the electronic chalkboard, the full array. The one thing that we ran into in almost every situation is that in order to get that additional support into a site, we had to run a second telephone line, and we doubled the toll charges to that site. So we were looking at our own system that we had in place, and the television signal has in between whenever your picture rolls vertically, the black band that's between the pictures. It's called the vertical blanking interval, and there's some space in there that's unused. And there's a technology that's now available called Teletext. And all it does is it allows you to take basically computer-generated graphics and insert them into that unused space and send them with the television signal. What that looks like in an instructional situation is that the instructor is able to put together a group of high-resolution color graphics and textual materials in individual screens or frames that can be inserted into that space in the television picture, sent, and the student then with a little decoding device can select pages out of that group at the instructor's direction. Audio conference, instructor says, I want you to pull up page 22. Student flips the switch on his television set, decoder gets the screen up that is the audio, the teletext, pushes 22 on his little touchpad, and he has that screen of information there, and all the other students do too. And that screen of information can be left there after the class is over for the student to follow up and review, or can be put into that place for him to access prior to the class. I said all that to say this. What we're trying to do, what we're attempting to do in looking at the future and the technologies that we have available to us are two things. We want to make the technologies as easy for both the student and the instructor to use as we possibly can. And a term that we keep throwing out that's not anything unique to us is the term transparency. We want to make the system as painless as we possibly can for the instructor and the student so that the system doesn't become a roadblock or a barrier, but it's simply a means of their communicating with each other easily. And the second thing that we're trying to do is to take the technology that we're already paying for, and with the developments that are developing so rapidly now in the use of digital communications in particular and other kinds of things, we can use what we already have in a variety of different ways, additional ways, to increase that capacity for an instructor, a student, or any individuals that need to communicate with each other, to communicate on a more complete basis. That opens up a possibility for us in education in particular to look at an instructional situation and we say, we've got this that needs to be taught, we have this student that needs to learn this, and we have this instructor who has these capabilities for transferring this information. We can use television to do one thing well. We can use audio conferencing to provide that personal contact that's necessary. We can transfer information in the vertical blanking interval to provide the student review kinds of activities or things that he can look at prior to a class or look for assignments. We can utilize the computer to do the kinds of activities that he needs to for repeating activities, for taking tests, for gathering information. But what we're looking at is an integration of technologies around a given situation. We look at an instructional situation, we integrate these technologies into an approach to that student's needs in the delivery of this information and make it as painless as possible, but the most effective that we can possibly do. And Representative Boucher mentioned at the very beginning, we're not going to be able to build highways in the state of Alaska everywhere. We don't have a transportation network. Communications, telecommunications for the state of Alaska essentially are our electronic highway. They're a means of delivering certain kinds of services to people around the state of Alaska. And the thing that we have to face, I think, to a large extent, or at least from our perspective, is that in most cases, or in many cases, there are no alternatives to that. That's either the way we do it or it doesn't get done because of all the things that Jane mentioned, the reductions in revenues at the federal level, potential kind of leveling off of things that we need to do within the state of Alaska. We have to look at what we can do with telecommunications. We have to look at the kinds of human services that can be delivered on that electronic highway. Well, I'm going to, I think, stop at that point. There are a number of other things, but I think that we need to leave as much time as possible for questions.
I just like, as the chancellor, I'd like to get your feel for this, if you care to comment. Ed, did you want to speak today? Is there anybody here that would?
I think I'll save mine for
anybody. All right. Okay. Share some of your enthusiasm. What you're doing is with some of the people there. In case you haven't met Herb Lyon, the Chancellor of ACC, a very exciting and enthusiastic person, and I saw him. Did you come down for this today?
No, I was testifying in another committee this morning. And
I'd like to have you share some of the thoughts that we shared for just maybe a moment or two in this particular area.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate this opportunity. I think a lot of it has already been said. We at ACC are users of this technology. We are very excited about it. As we see it, we've only scratched the surface in terms of what we can do and what we will be doing over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, etc. We have got a group of people at ACC. Several of them are our faculty members who work very carefully with Bill McCann and Jane Emmert and all of their people in providing these various services. We are just very excited about all of the opportunities and the possibilities. For example, we have one of our faculty members on professional development leave this semester. He is in England right now studying the whole teletext, video text approach as used by the institutions in England, which in some ways are ahead of some of ours. We also have been chosen as a pilot site for an Annenberg Foundation grant to develop computer technology into the whole telecommunications thing. We'll be telling you more about that when we talk to you in conjunction with the University of Alaska Computer Network at that time. I think Bill summarized it extremely well when he said that we want to have a variety of these technologies available for a given instructional situation and mix them up, use those that are appropriate, not force it, not take and then say we've got to fit this into this mold, but to have more arrows in the quiver, if you wish, of our instructional people, to let them go out and meet the needs of our constituencies. Obviously, the major constituency for Anchorage Community College is the population of the Anchorage Bowl, and that's where most of our people come from. However, we have several statewide programs at Anchorage Community College, i.e. programs that are that exist only at Anchorage Community College and serve the state. Things in allied health sciences, for example, and some others. So we're trying to use these technologies in that regard, too. Our new allied health sciences building is wired for broadcasting all over the state. We can do television that way. We're in the process of getting that going. They've got a new microscope over there that you can literally take a slide or a blood sample or what have you and put it under the microscope, and you can project that slide to anywhere in the state. We're just, you know, like I say, we've only scratched the surface, but we're extremely excited about it. We've got a lot of very good people who are working with, very cooperatively with these persons on it. That's all I really care to say now, but I'd be happy to answer any questions as we proceed. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Jane, Bill, why don't you ride back up there? In fact, feel free to sit in that other chair. And Bev, in case there's any questions. Bev. Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few questions just to sort of get an update between now and last year. First of all, on audio conferencing, one of the things that the Learn Alaska system has been providing us as legislators, or at least in my district, has been the use of its facilities to augment the legislative teleconference network. Those facilities have been operated by volunteers. The school systems have been, on the whole, really forthcoming. And sometimes we run into small technical problems. One of them is the confusion on the part of the community education coordinators as a whole, and in certain communities in particular, about what the appropriate role is for the use of your equipment. For example, they are funded, if I'm not mistaken, on a course-by-course basis for any kind of personnel or other funding required for the utilization of their audio conferencing system. Maybe I'll misstate the facts and you can straighten me out for the benefit of me and the committee. The bottom line is that it's been working very, very well, but it's been an informal relationship. And I was wondering if you might have any suggestions. A lot of us serve communities which are widespread and cannot and will not logically be funded for a legislative teleconference site. And as long as we continue to use volunteers and have the cooperation of the school system, things work well. I wondered if you just, I have several questions, but that's basically my first one. Do you have any comments on how the Learn Alaska audio conferencing system should be used? What kind of structures you would like to see it put to in terms of providing, in my opinion, the educational benefit of contact with the legislature to the school systems and the members of the community as part of community education?
Well, there are, I think, some real benefits of this relationship that we do have right now in terms of making that equipment widely available. And right now, the people who serve as audio content site coordinators do that sometimes strictly as a voluntary effort. They may not be employed by anyone, but simply have agreed to do do that.
That's the case in my district.
Okay. Are any of them actual community school coordinators or anything like that?
In Mosquito Lake now, it looks like, rather than the gentleman who was volunteering, he may or may not be because facilities issues developed because the school was not open during those hours.
Mm-hmm.
They were concerned with the expense of opening it and so forth. That took care of the evening, or that was the problem related to the evening teleconference, but the school district has determined that they'll allow the school to be open 3 nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
For that purpose. During the day, there are other systems at work in that school that prevent their use of the dedicated line or of a line often during school hours. It is above the school phone, so to speak. So that issue comes up a little bit, spatial conflict. To answer your question, though, in Keynes, or in this elementary school that's up the highway 27 miles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what, I suspect that during the school time, they're going to just use it for your formal use, whatever that is. During the evening, 3 times a week, they'll make it available. The community education coordinator is going to take spatial and possibly moderating responsibility in that community for that program. I think that's the only one where it's really directly tied to the school system. In most cases, school is open more. It's not considered a spur school the way that one is, and so we haven't had any problem. We just find a volunteer in the community to run the system, and someone lets them in and lets them out. I guess they go through whoever is responsible for managing the equipment to kind of get cleared on how it works and that sort of thing. But in answer to your question, it's only in Haines that the actual community education coordinator has become involved.
Well, the only reason I ask that is because there are, in a number of communities, people who have a job. It might be community school coordinator, secretary, it could be any role, and then their bosses essentially ask them and assign it a part of their work, their regular work assignment, to pick up the responsibility to be the site coordinator. And in that instance, sometimes then if the person's doing it within their work, then they can only do it within the framework that, you know, their boss supports. But very often what's happening, it sounds like it happened there, they then identify someone in the community who can pick up that additional responsibility, and I think we have that term alternate site coordinator, and then that person takes that responsibility for those extra times that simply can't be assumed by that central person who's the site coordinator. And then it's worked out really on a case-by-case basis so that it's flexible and responsive to the local conditions.
I just started saying that the person that works with you know, those individual site coordinators and tries to keep all that balanced on a volunteer basis is Mike Woodhead, and the problem we deal with is we've got the one individual and he's working with 600 volunteers in 330 different locations around the state, and so a lot of times, you know, things will slip by, and by and large, I think that, you know, the people's involvement and their interest at the local level has been extremely high. And it's been almost a miracle, you know, that the thing has gone as smoothly as it has.
Do you see any way, if I may, just a brief follow-up, do you see any way that the existing system, the existing community schools program, the benefits of making legislative information more available in the community as an educational device, do you see any formal relationship that would be appropriate between Learn Alaska's audio conferencing system and the Legislative Affairs Agency?
Yeah,
and for that matter, any way to fund it?
Yeah, we cooperate, work with the LTN on a regular basis, and complement each other wherever possible. We've tried to maintain that kind of work relationship, and in many cases where people want it, that equipment is available for use to supplement the activities of the LTN if it belongs to Learn Alaska, and vice versa. In the past, it's been that way also. The situation that we have where there is a conflict, though, is where in a community there's limited equipment, you know, like one set or something, and we have formal instruction going on where people are actually signed up for courses or there's teaching being done, and then we'll have activities that may involve the legislature or the community schools program. In our situation, the priority or the preference is given to that formal instruction. And, you know, beyond that, the only thing that we could do, really, I think, to alleviate or improve that situation would be to provide additional equipment at the site. I think beyond that, it's a matter of capacity of the system and scheduling of the facilities, but there's no philosophical conflict between uses at all. And wherever the opening exists, you know, we do cooperate on a regular basis.
May I just follow up one more? So then, basically what you're saying is that the equipment is there, you're happy to see it used for this purpose. There's no funding available to create any kind of a more formal use of that for providing government information to the public, apart from the conflict that would assume the priority for your direct use, but just in general. And the things seem to be going well, and unless money can be developed to make that system directly related to this system, that basically we've got a pretty good thing informally working. Is that fairly described?
Mm-hmm.
That certainly is my feeling too, although I would like to be able to feel that some of the work that we have to do to coordinate the volunteers and the sites and the Legislative Information Service, that were being done through some liaison between your site coordinators and theirs, that would be a service to the legislature. Whether or not that should be your responsibility is another question. I mean, I sort of feel it should be mine, but it would be a convenience, of course, if it were yours.
I don't think that there would be a real problem in generating that, because our work with LTN in the past has been primarily on an as-needed basis, and it's been a very good working relationship. And I think if we wanted to develop a more formal liaison on that basis, that would be just a matter of sitting down together and working out.
Well, maybe that would be something the chairman would like to think about as a future topic of discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious if you could give us an appreciation for how programming decisions are made. I have a statement here in one research paper with the University of Alaska and DOE jointly set policy and make regulatory decisions. It comes right down to Lewis and Essay. How big a group is it to make that decision?
The university has a statewide advisory committee, and our advisory committee does an annual, makes an annual decision on the program that's sponsored by the university. Courses and supplemental programming is reviewed by university faculty from throughout the university system. Those reviews then come into our statewide advisory committee. The committee, usually there are more recommendations than there are resources. So then the committee, based on criteria that they have established, which places the highest priority on courses that would serve rural students who have no alternative serving, and secondly, courses that are serving more than one service area, have the highest priority. So then that advisory committee makes a decision, and those decisions are then provided to Beverly Michaels, who's the programmer for the network, and then she then implements them from the university. DOE has a process that's slightly different, but it is a process that Bill Bramble could probably best explain, that again comes kind of from a constituent base up to DOE, which then provides their recommendations to the programming department. Do you want to comment on that?
I'll just say briefly, I'm Bill Bramble from the Department of Education. I'm James' counterpart within the Department of Education. I'll be here Friday and get into some of these topics in more detail. But our process is in many ways similar. What we do is invite representatives in from each of the three school districts.
Department of Education provides the bulk of the funding. I'm curious again about this relationship between the university and the department. If in fact the Department of Education is providing the bulk of the funding, think would be that the Department of Education is in charge, if you will. But I didn't hear that just now.
Well, it's a real partnership, and the funding, as is the program, is really a consortium effort, with the department providing funding for K through 12 programming, which is an area that I'm not as familiar with. It's considerably more complex, a lot more serious, so it does require a different proportion.
There are many more programs that are purchased by the Department of Education to fit within the same time allocation that the university has. Typically, the K through 12 programming will run from 10 to 15 minutes in length, in some cases 30 minutes. But for the most part, it's a matter of purchasing 4 programs for a given hour rather than 2, which leads to more costs. The additional cost is that there are what we call duplication rights, which make these programs available through the state library system for duplication for individual teachers, which is an added cost. So that the costs to the Department of Education to fill their allotted time in the network are very much higher than it would be for the university to fill their time allocations.
Because of the nature of the program, more than anything else. When you're looking at kindergarten through grade 12, and a broad spectrum of courses that are offered, as you know, to supplement everything from art to math to you name it, the number of courses that may appear in a given semester, individual courses that may appear in a given semester for the OE may be 125. For the university, it may be 15 or 18. So the volume of having individual purchases is a lot greater. And the programming is directly related to the curricular program and not so much the operation of the network. The operation of the network and the allocation of time is perhaps one of the, well, it works very well. It's almost we've commented among ourselves, it's almost a miracle that it works, but it works very well. Because the allocation of time, like on a television network, the decision was made between the two groups. There are certain times of day, which are the times of day that the kinds of students the university needs. That time of day is what they need. This time of day during the school day is pretty much the turf of the Department of Education, because that's when the kids are in the classroom. So those two basic allocations are made. Then the other part, which kind of falls in the no man's land, the two agencies sit down together and decide the kinds of allocations they want made there. And amazingly enough, it works.
Maybe an anomaly.
It may be.
I wonder if you could give me an appreciation for what the FY86 requests are in each department.
The university request is a maintenance level request. And for the Learn Alaska Network, our budget consists of two components. One is instructional support services, which are services that we provide to university faculty and staff to support them in orienting themselves to the use of the network. And then the second part of our budget is the Learn Alaska Network operations budget. The continuation level for the Learn Alaska Network budget is about $1 million. And you will see in our budget one or two increments, which are increments in revenues rather than general fund appropriations. And those are for reimbursable services agreement with DOE to cover some of this programming activity we've just been discussing. And secondly, some interagency transfers from other units of the university's district who use the audio conference network to pay their toll charge bills. But the kind of the bottom line is that it's a continuing level of general fund.
What is that bottom line?
I don't have the figure right off of my tongue, but it's right around $1 million. It might be about 1.2 or 1.3. 1.2 or 1.3 million.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I wonder if you could provide the committee with that information based on what this table 6 is right now. Give us
sure.
Information for
FY
86. If I understood you correctly, a large part of the DOE is a supplemental.
I'm sorry, supplemental?
I thought I just heard you say that there was about $1 million and there was a supplemental appropriation.
No, it's a revenue. We are asking for authority to receive funds from DOE through an RSA. We have, every year we have a general reimbursable services agreement which transfers funds from DOE to the university for us then to carry forward with a continuing network function. And it's particularly in the programming.
What it amounts to is that all the money to pay the telephone bills, that money resides in DOE's budget, Chuck Chee Community College's budget, UAA's budget. We do the network, we keep up with all the telephone calls, we schedule them all, and we give them a monthly bill which says, okay, you owe this much. And that's the thing that Jane's talking about. That it wasn't that way year before last. It was changed this last year when the funds were allocated out to the individual units. So that what appears to be an increment is simply the paperwork necessary to make that money flow back so we can pay those phone bills. And that's really what it is. It was a situation where prior to last year all that money was in a central pot, and it was allocated out from a central location. Last year, all that money was taken out of the central pot, allocated all back out to the places, and now it's got to come back into the central location to pay the bill again. So it's kind of, you know, catch 22 sort of thing.
If I understand this overview here, the DOE, the FYA6 budget requests additional installation.
Yeah, we have.
We'd be taking that up with them at, what is it,
what I'm trying to make sense of is that big picture that you speak of rather than breakout individual. But also, obviously, they know what the breakout is. I'm sure you're all aware of it.
Yeah,
we apparently are faced with a difficult prospect of cutting the government budget.
Excuse me, it's 2 o'clock. Do any of you have any commitments at 2?
Yeah,
you did? Okay, all right. We can continue on. What is your pleasure? But Peter, you have your hand.
Well, I just have a quick question.
Okay,
now, and
just
I,
go ahead.
Whatever you all want to do as far as time. Last year, if I remember correctly, and maybe that's what you were referring to, the Department of Administration function was reduced and the program broken out. Could you just, in the very roughest terms, tell me how that concluded? What, and I think it would maybe be useful for Representative Thompson as well, what the ratios were in fiscal, say, 84 compared to fiscal 85 as to where the responsibilities were transferred. Really, in just rough terms, please.
It became almost a 50-50 situation as of this year.
I mean, you have 3 components, right?
Right. So initially, when the thing was set up, a large chunk of the money was in the Department of Administration's budget. That money was primarily for 2 things: maintaining the television network, the sites all over the state, the 250 small transmitters, and the payment of the communications charges, or the transponder that we have to pay for the television signal, and the toll charges that we pay for, and that was all in their budget. Last year, a couple of things happened. The communications charges were taken out for the transponder and related costs of the sites to lease those from LASCOM were put in DOE's budget. The audio conferencing money to pay for all the toll charges was taken and spread out to all of the user units, in, you know, right down to the individual units, and except in DOE, where it was still kept as a pool that's allocated in out as a resource to the different school districts. What was the other element? The DOA, yeah, the university then essentially stayed basically where it was. There was no real change to the university's input.
Can you just give me the basic proportions? In 84, it was roughly what part DOA, what part DOE, what part U of A? Roughly.
84.
Yeah, or, you know, back before the change.
Right, it was about a third. DOA had more than that. They had a third, a half, and whatever the balance would be there.
Okay, now, we're saying roughly 50% DOA, 20% U of A, and 30% DOE, or the other way around?
The other way around.
20% DOE and 30% university.
Right.
Right now it's about one-third.
No, right now it's about, it's 45-45-10. It's 45 in DOE, 45 in the university,
And only the equipment maintenance in DOA.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I want to thank you very much for taking the time to appear before us. I really appreciate. And one of the things that I would like to do, as opposed to just being a body that's coming before us and telling us what you're doing, feel free to contact me or any of the individuals or my staff that's on the committee. What I hope to do as we go along is that there is a merging of the people. The technologies themselves are beginning to merge, but the exchange of information, because beyond just education, these very same systems can be used to run government more efficiently. I see so many ways that it can be done now, but I think we have to cross the hurdle over this word telecommunication as being something that someone has to have a doctor's degree to even begin to sit down and talk about. So I think there is opportunities for us to truly lead the way with what we have. And I'm hoping, and I've talked to Chancellor Lyon and the other people, there's a tremendous amount of resource people out here willing to address themselves to what we call the information industry.
I'd like to just comment.
Yes.
One of the things we've heard from, and we generally hear from the two prime users, the Department of Education and the University of Alaska, they have led the way throughout the nation, really, in beginning to use this technology in a very targeted and pinpoint and useful way. But there are other users that are potential users that need to know about this network, and I see the state agencies as one of them, potentially, as they learn more. I see this as a means for a way to train, a way to disseminate information in an efficient and in an efficient, cost-effective, hopefully, down the road way. I think that that development is yet to come, and I'm hoping that this committee can see the potential for that use and can help us. There is no question but that all of us are in the developmental stage right now. We are leading the world in what is being done in the use of technology. The Chinese are coming to us. The Philippines, people from South America are coming to us. None of us have the final answer as to how this technology is to be used. We are doing our work as well as we can to develop this software, these programs, but we are really looking to you folks to help us identify needs and then creatively, and that's what we're talking about. It's creative stuff. There are no answers and no experts out there. And that's what we have to all acknowledge.
I kind of feel like, it's been said before, we're starting on a journey, and about all I've said
is,
let's
go. And it sounds cliche, but that's what it is. That's exactly
what it is. And somebody says, well, where are we going? And I said, well, we're going into the future. There's some exciting people that we can bring here. People like Toffler, Nasebit, others that are currently using this. I've got a little 0795 software program up right now that if anybody in the next week or so wants to call up and leave an electronic letter or put a little bulletin board up there, that they will be able to use this, and it doesn't cost $15,000 to get this. I would hope down the road that beyond your staff looking in the box and getting the information out, that it will be possible for you to experience with simple terminals in your area, being able to exchange, have ongoing teleconferences on some of the various subjects, computer conferences and the like of that. The technology is out there, and we've evidently, particularly our university, Department of Education, have had the foresight. But there are also a lot of multi-million dollar machines out here that are just sitting there crunching numbers and spitting out pieces of paper and invoices that could be utilized to help us make more efficient, lean and mean government, which is, I know, we're all going to have to deal with. Excuse me, Jane.
I was just thinking, as you were talking about bringing in resources, when you get into doing that, it would be great if you could let us know when you're going to do it. I'm thinking about two things. One is our own learning, and the second is if there's any way to do it, we get enough time ahead to be able to capture that so that we can, carry it on the Learn Alaska network, because we're all looking for that kind of resource. If you start to bring in people, let us know.
Well, before I did it, would be our collective thinking. I, or the individual, I have a few ideas, but I've already talked to Chancellor Lyon. Start thinking, using your imagination, bringing suggestions to us. This isn't something that we're just going to sit there and push your buttons. This is a fact-finding, a desire to stimulate and to stir up and to develop an understanding of what this thing called telecommunications means.
I thank you very much for your time and appreciate your being here. And Bill, we look forward to seeing you on Friday. And if at some future date you want to, let's say, put on a demonstration for the committee, if it could be done here, feel free to do that. I don't want you leaving here with the feeling of, gosh, they asked these questions, but I wish they'd asked those. Be bold, and if you want to put on a demonstration to see what this means about, feel free to do that, because this is what it's all about. So there's no more business to come before the Special Committee on Telecommunication will adjourn at 2:12. Thank you very much for coming, and Peter, thank you for the use.